Coming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by American Payment Centers and Security Cabinets, the organization that serves utilities and consumers with drop boxes for direct bill payments. 888-DROP-BOX. Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lamford. Well, to borrow a phrase, the joy of COLA is lost on legislators, doctors, and dentists who are alarmed at how much of the stuff kids are drinking these days. Two legislators here in Minnesota have introduced a bill that would ban sales of soda pop on school grounds during the classroom day. And for backup, all they have to do is point to recent studies that link soft drink consumption with both a rise in tooth decay and alarming obesity trends in children. But it's not only school kids who might argue against the bill. Many school districts have lucrative contracts with soft drink producers that help them pay for student services. And some argue, shouldn't we be teaching kids to moderate their intake instead of barring them from that Mountain Dew? We'll talk today to one of the legislators introducing the bill, Representative Jean Pawlowski. I keep trying to give you a promotion there, Representative. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you.
Now, what exactly is your proposal?
The proposal actually comes about as a result of meetings across the state about 3 weeks ago by our dentists in our areas. The Southeastern Minnesota contingent met in Monona. And they went through a number of issues, but the biggest issue that they brought up was tooth decay. And they had seen an alarming rise in tooth decay in teens. And the one thing about the dentists is they monitor what their patients do. So they always ask the teens, okay, what are you doing to take care of your teeth? And pop consumption is very high on the list, particularly now the swilling of pop. They use it almost as a daily mouthwash. And with the advent of the new plastic bottles with the tops that actually screw on and off, you can keep it in your backpack, you can keep it in your locker, and they're consuming it all day long. So they met with us, and they had this proposal, and I said, as a teacher for 25 years, I've seen the escalation of pop machines in the schools, and I've also seen the escalation of consumption. And I didn't put two and two together until they told me about this problem with tooth decay.
Well, I mean, how bad is it?
It's three or four times what it was before the machines, and before the active consumption. So you're seeing a massive increase in tooth decay. And what's interesting, when we had the rally at the Capitol for the college students, both the University of Minnesota and Minsky, I didn't bring the bill up. They brought the bill up. And one of the students said, you know, I didn't drink any pop through high school. It wasn't available to me. I started drinking it in college, and now my mouth is full of cavities. So they were volunteering information. So it's quite a problem. And I think folks have to know that this comes about as a result of a request from our healthcare professionals. It's not something a couple of legislators dreamed up.
Are we just talking about pop? I mean, aren't there lots of drinks with sugar out there?
They have a list, and I would suggest that you talk to your local dentist because he has the brochure. They have a list. There are two problems. It's not just sugar. It's also acidity. And some of the pops are very high. At the bottom of the list, they have battery acid. So when you start getting down toward the bottom of that list, you're getting pretty close to having battery acid in your mouth. So between the acid and the sugar, it has an impact on your teeth, the enamel, and then into the cavities.
Well, I guess getting back to my question then, if it's a really highly sugared fruit drink, then we don't worry about it as much?
A highly sugared fruit drink probably has as concern, but the combination of sugar and acid is a deadly combination.
And so there's acid in cola?
There's an acidity rate, yes.
Okay. Now, excuse me. What about those folks who say, look, we already have regulations. Most schools have to serve some sort of federal breakfast or hot lunch, and there's already federal regulations that say those machines, they're locked down when we're serving federally funded meals to kids.
Well, I think that illustrates the point about the problem. The federal government has already said we want students to have a nutritious meal during lunch. That does not include pop. So the federal government has already come in and said that there's a problem, and we want to make sure that our students are safe. And we've also banned smoking from the schools. We have a zero tolerance for violence in our schools. This isn't anything that we haven't looked at before to protect our students. So it's an ongoing issue of what happens to our students and how it happens to our students. And the other big issue here is really the funding stream. This does create a rather large revenue source for the schools. And I think it highlights a problem over the 1990s that we reduced the schools to selling pop in order to do what they need to do for public education. And I think that's a rather sad commentary.
Well, in fact, we're talking real money here. There's at least one school district I was reading has a 10-year contract that's worth a couple of million dollars. And as we can tell from the funding battles that are going on right now, schools do need to scramble for every dollar they get. Wouldn't it be easier just to teach kids to be a little more moderate in their intake and let the schools keep that couple million?
I think that that's why this debate is before us. I think both parents and school officials have to realize that everything comes at a cost. And granted, we want the revenue in our schools, but do we want it at a cost of doing injury to our students? So this is a good debate. I think it's one that needs to take place, if not just for the school districts, but also for the parents, because I don't think parents quite realize what happens sometimes to students in schools. If you ask your typical teenager how to go at school, you're lucky to get maybe a guttural noise or, you know, it's okay. They don't tell you that I had three or four, you know, cans or bottles of pop during the day. And what they consume for lunch.
I was hoping you could go back and talk for a minute about the rate of consumption and the rate of tooth decay. Are we saying that kids are having two cans of pop every day and that's leading to five cavities? What exactly are we saying here?
I think the best thing to do is to talk to your the dentist and see what he's monitoring in your particular area. The dentists in southeastern Minnesota were telling us that students literally are consuming pop all day long. So almost from the time they get up and come to school, they have a pop. Then they have pop all through the day, and then probably when they go to work, because most students work, they'll continue consumption there. But what they were telling us was that the students literally drink it from the first time they enter the building, and then it's either in their locker, in their backpack, and they're drinking it all day.
All right, and we're seeing seven cavities in a kid's mouth, where before we'd only see two?
I'm not a dentist.
Okay.
So I can't give you the precise numbers.
One of the other questions, of course, is, are we sure that it's just pop? What about brownies, cookies, sweets?
The dentists were telling us that that's an issue, too.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're really concerned about is this constant liquid that's in the mouth. That they don't drink it so much anymore. They're using it as sort of a mouth wash. So it's in their mouth, and because it's in there so long that it there's no place for it to go. So they're not just swallowing it, they're swilling it. That's what they were telling us.
Huh.
And that's what the students were telling them.
Now, shouldn't this decision be left to individual schools?
That's one of the debates I think we're going to have here.
Uh-huh.
I've already had the POP various lobbies come into my office and the School Board Association and the Principals Association. And I've carried controversial legislation before, and a typical pattern of mine is to have a meeting before we have a hearing, because I want everybody to sit down and say, okay, here, we've identified a problem. Is the solution to the problem this bill? Because if it isn't, then there may not be a need to move forward. On the other hand, if we do move forward, how will this bill address the problem? There may be ways to address this problem, as you've already alluded to, through education, through school districts and parents saying, you know, I better monitor this a little bit more closely.
We're talking to Representative Gene Pawlowski. He is one of two legislators who's introduced a bill that would shut down sales of pop during the school day on school grounds. He keeps referring to this debate that we have in front of us. We'd like you to join that debate. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Well, let's go back for a minute. What about those who would say, listen, this isn't going to stop with pop. Next thing you know, we'll be banning McDonald's, we'll be banning grease, we'll be banning fat.
So far we don't have our health professionals coming to us and saying that that's the problem. But you have had two studies, one recently on obesity linking soda pop. That was on the front page, I believe, of the St. Paul paper the same day that the bill was introduced, which is a coincidence. And then you have healthcare professionals from across the state saying that because they've looked into students' mouths, something that none of us do, they're reporting back to us that because of the patterns of consumption of this product, it's exacerbating cavities.
Well, maybe what we need to do is change the pattern of consumption.
And that's a good reason to have the discussion that we're having across the state today. And I think parents need to be involved in this, and also school officials, to say that if this is as big a problem as the dentists are saying, then we have to take a hard look at what we're doing in our schools and outside of the schools with the consumption of these types of products.
Let's go to Gene in Minneapolis. Gene, welcome to Mid-Morning. Hi, Gene.
Thank you for calling. I'll let him talk.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to thank the representative for this. I am the mom of two teenage girls, and I don't think the general public realize what a big problem this is as far as having so much pop around. As a parent, I'd try and do my part, but the schools really must do their part. And I think a point that's really, there's one medical point that he hasn't made, that also the long-lasting effect of osteoporosis on girls in particular about overconsumption of pop is very, very serious. But as far as the school policy, we have to remember that we have compulsory education. And as long as the kids do not have a choice about being in there, if you want to look at it negatively, they're compulsed to be there, then we have a responsibility to model the best kind of environment for them. I mean, in my family, we don't let the kids drink pop, or we don't have it around much. We have bottled water and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's hard for those families if then you're introduced into this environment where it's readily available throughout the day. And I think we're saying to them that, yeah, we teach this stuff in health class, but we don't really believe it.
Okay, thanks, Jean.
Thank you, Jean.
We're going to go to Alicia in Minneapolis.
Yes,
hi.
I teach reading part-time in the summers as a private program to kids who need a little boost. They need their enthusiasm and their kind of just rudimentary skills in reading boosted. And I'm getting my PhD, so I'm not like a professional teacher. It's something I do out of passion. And so I have a little different take on this, is that I have these parents who come to me on a Saturday or Friday morning and they say, my son or daughter has a real problem paying attention. And they've loaded up a snack bag for them with, you know, half a liter of Sprite or Coke, a couple of brownies. And, yes, their child will have an attention deficit disorder. You can't, just from an educational standpoint, kids can't pay attention when they're wired up on sugar and caffeine. And so to me it seems almost moot about money or, you know, even dental is last. If they're in school to learn, they can't do it when they're jacked up like that. Thank you.
No, Alicia, so yes. Are you saying that the pop isn't the problem, the parents are?
No. I'm saying, well, yes, parents don't seem to understand that you give a kid sugar and it's like giving them speed. And the school should be looking at it from that point of view, too, that you can't, it makes a teacher's job much harder to do when the child is wired on sugar and caffeine.
Okay. Thanks, Alicia.
You're welcome.
Any reaction, Representative?
I was just making some notes. These two phone calls are pretty typical of the phone calls I've gotten since the bill was introduced, and I even had calls at home this past weekend. We had an Eggs and Issues in Winona. We had about 300 people show up, and a lot were concerned about education funding. And the overall, you know, argument has been that, well, we're going to end a revenue stream to our schools, and I think the average stream is about $40,000. That's a significant sum of money. And as you said, some have multi-billion dollar contracts over maybe a decade span. But one of the arguments that we have, and unfortunately in Minnesota, is sort of a resurrection of the argument Arnie Carlson had, that education's a black hole. I think you've seen the Ventura administration bring up the same issue. It's a black hole. Well, it's not a black hole because there's been too much funding. It's a black hole because there hasn't been enough. And I think we discovered where the black hole is. It's in our children's teeth.
We're going to go to Christy in Brooklyn Center. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello. I'd like to comment. I know when I was in high school that if people wanted pop and it wasn't available on campus, people would bring it and sell it out of their locker. Or there's also the teachers, I'm sure, would like to be able to have access to pop or something drink between classes as well. So if that's not there, then you're kind of disappointing them for a problem that you're trying to take care of the kids instead of the teachers.
Okay, thanks, Christy.
Uh-huh. No, I don't. This is an argument that's been brought up too. We've had a number of people stop by from both the soft drink industry and the school board association. I haven't heard from the teachers association, but I've heard from teachers. The teachers that have contacted me so far agree that the machines are a problem.
We're going to go to Bruce calling us from St. Paul. Bruce, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
In the conversation so far, I haven't heard anybody talk about sugar-free or diet pops. Just about every brand, even major brand through the smaller brands, offer an alternative. And it's probably not good that they drink that either in large quantities, but it certainly addresses the dental issue as far as causing cavities and caries in teeth. And the other thing is that could the kids be hooked on caffeine? Is that why they drink it? And again, that isn't good for kids either. So if you could respond to these this way, there, it would be sort of a compromise. Kids have something to put in their mouth and maybe not causing the damage that we're looking at, and the revenue stream would continue in place. Thank you.
Some of the diet pops still have a high acidity rate. They may not have the sugar, but they still have the acidity. The diet Pepsis and Cokes are still in that range on the list that the dentist gave us. So that may not be the solution to the problem, switching to diet. The consumption was the problem. The rate at which the pop is consumed and the volume of the pop and the fact that it's no longer simply quenches a thirst, it's there in the mouth so long. That's the pitch that the dentist gave us. And since it came from across the state and it's been building for the last few years, it's now showing up in their offices. And, of course, the same thing has happened in our schools. If you were in a school 10 years ago, you didn't see the number of pop machines in the schools. It didn't exist. That's come about in the 1990s also. You also see now when you go to a sporting event, usually a soft drink company will be the company that will pop for the sign that has the scores on it. It's a Pepsi sign or a Coke sign or Mountain Dew sign, and that contract pays for the sign, which is a nice sign, but it also means that there will be the consumption of that beverage in the school.
I want to get back to what strikes me as one of the central questions. There's been a lot of commentary written about this piece of legislation, and there are folks who don't necessarily oppose it, but just keep saying, what are we really teaching our children when we lock down the pop machine? Are you really teaching them anything? Why can't we leave it up? Why don't we affect the rate of the consumption at the kid instead of at the machine?
Well, as one parent already called who doesn't drink, they don't drink pop at home, but she has two teenage girls, there's a lot of peer pressure to do what other students do in school, and they are available. The gentleman just called in and the lady before him about the caffeine consumption. You mentioned one of your employees who had to have a caffeinated drink in the morning, and I assume some people are having coffee for the same reason. They like to get that little buzz. And students aren't any different than we are. And in fact, they're maybe a little bit more in need of one to get that supercharged engine of theirs going during the day. So, it's no different than us. The problem is, though, that they're a little bit more susceptible if they're drinking it all day, and they are young, and we would like to have, and Dennis pointed out, have teeth for the rest of their lives, at least their own.
We're going to go to Lisa in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi there. Bruce said a couple things that I wanted to reiterate, too, and you were just talking about caffeine truly is an addictive substance. When I became pregnant and decided to quit my two cups of coffee in the morning, just those two cups was enough where I started having headaches. I definitely felt withdrawal. And these kids oftentimes are working jobs in the evening where they're probably staying up later than we would like, and they're getting up pretty early on some of these high school schedules. And absolutely, I'm certain that there are some kids that are addicted to the caffeine, and probably the parents don't realize the extent of it. And then the other comment I wanted to make was I work for a company that we sell marketing programs to companies that have products, consumer packaged goods products. And that's all well and good when we're talking about adults, but the schools really are making a deal with the devil here in that they are providing an exclusive audience of new consumers to these corporations, and that's why they're willing to pay millions of dollars. And we are giving up the protection and best interests of our children when we do that.
Thanks, Lisa.
And she brings up the point again. Why are the machines there? They're there to create a revenue stream. That revenue stream began to be eroded in the 1990s as a result of us not funding public education. The schools do what they always do. They found a way. They found a way to keep kids with marching uniforms. They found a way to send them on a trip. They found a way to make sure that if they need a band instrument, they're going to get a band instrument. They found a way that if we can get the ice rink funded, we'll fund it by having the pop or other companies come in and put the signs on the walls. They found a way. So part of the problem is us. We decided that public education wasn't the type of thing we were going to commit or invest public dollars in. And this is what's happened.
How apprehensive are you about putting schools in the squeeze, however? You're making these very able arguments here, but there are folks who are just as adamant that education funding is a black hole. So you do the right thing. They think they're doing the right thing. And then there's that poor principal caught in the middle, being told now, okay, you're not going to get that revenue stream anymore. And, oh, by the way, we're not going to fund you the way you requested either. What happens then?
I think that's a poor way to phrase it. The principal isn't caught in the middle. The children are caught in the middle. And they're the ones who are paying the price for having this type of funding stream.
Uh-huh. But so, the principal's still the person who's going to have to figure how to get that money.
But until recently, I don't think we've had a statewide debate on the impact of what's happened because we haven't funded public education. Of the sources that the schools have turned to keep the quality of education that they're delivering to our students, in order to do that, here's what they've been reduced to: selling pop and snacks.
We're going to go to Jerry in Lakeville. Jerry, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I got like four quick questions for you, if I may. Number one, if you take away the soda pop, you're taking away the revenue stream, as you indicated, so then the school is going to be asking the taxpayers to fund their band instruments, their football gear, and some of the other stuff that's part of the revenue stream they use, as you alluded to. The other question relating to the soda pop, if you take it away from the students, what's the state they can take it in their gym bags? And are they going to strip search the gym bags or zero tolerance of soda pop on the campus? Last question, if I may, please. What about alternatives to, say, diet soda pop? All right, you got acidic levels in that, even though you don't have quite the quantity of sugar. You also have apple juice, orange juice, and milk. Milk, orange juice, and apple juice have sugar or acidic chemicals in it that are also bad for your teeth. I think it all boils down to just having good dental care, just dental hygiene for everybody, whether you're an adult, as a teacher, professor, parents, as well as the students. If you maintain dental care, you'll have your teeth regardless of what you are consuming. That is my comment and question, sir.
Okay, thanks, Jerry.
Well, fortunately, we have a surplus in this state. Now, granted, there'll be tax rebates and there'll be tax cuts, but I think that part of the investment that surplus should be is in our public schools, and the reason why would be the issue that you just brought up, that the sources that they've turned to for revenue have, in fact, produced revenue, but they've done so at a cost, and the cost has been to have cavities in our students' teeth. I don't think there's going to be pop police in the schools, but if the machines aren't there, if they're not that readily available, you and I both know it's a lot easier if you can just go across the concourse or go down the hall to get a pop. If you've got to bring it in or if you've got to leave the building, that usually will be enough so folks won't do it quite as often as they have before.
Let's go to Andrea. She's calling us from Shorewood. Andrea, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thank you. I'm so glad you're talking about this. Are there any safe products that schools could make money off of? And this talk about diet pop really has me going, because I think diet pop really affects especially girls hormonally, very negative product for people, as well as the carbonation. But two things you could add, you know, into the discussion is, one is, could you have a piece in the legislation that creates some sort of public debate ongoing about the issues, the health issues of what we eat? Because I think controlling people's behavior is not a very productive thing, yet if people will make better choices if they know more information. And then the other thing is, you know, selling water, selling juice, things that aren't unhealthy. What kind of money could you make from that?
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Andrew, the dentists have that at the top of their list. I'm drinking some of it right now, just water. And granted, those things could produce revenue too. So, you know, the concern here is that if this debate take place, and I don't think anyone realized the scope of the problem until the dentist came to us and said, here's what we're looking at, and we can't find a way through our office to offset it, so we're asking for your help. And I'm not known to put in these types of bills. In fact, I'm sort of known to go the other way. But I've taught for 25 years. I've seen the problem firsthand in the high school that I teach in, and I've seen how students consume the product. So I know that the problem exists. This bill may not be the answer, but I think the debate needs to take place. And I also think we have to be very cognizant of what we do when we say, well, we're not going to get money from the state to contain this program or to continue this program, so we're going to turn to this source. Well, there are ramifications for turning to those revenue streams.
We are talking to Representative Gene Pawlowski. He's a DFL state representative from Winona. We're talking about a bill that he has introduced that would shut down pop sales during the school day on school grounds. We'd like to have you join this debate, and it's President's Day, so we figure there might even be some students out there. We'd sure like to hear from you. 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. Minnesota Public Radio is listener-supported. We'd like to extend a special invitation to you to become a new member or restart your lapsed membership. Join us online at minnesotapublicradio.org.
Getting the news is one thing. Being informed is quite another. I'm Bob Edwards, host of NPR's Morning Edition. You get the headlines here, but we go deeper with thought-provoking interviews and analysis of the day's events. It's the best way to know what's happening across the nation and around the globe. It's why you tune in day after day, and I hope it's why you become a member.
To become a member today, just click and join at minnesotapublicradio.org.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. I want to remind you, a few minutes after 10, we'll be talking to Robert J. Lifton. He's the co-author of Who Owns Death? Capital Punishment, the American Conscience, and the End of Executions. Now, this is a capital punishment opponent who believes he's going to be successful. He says that we're a lot more ambivalent about the death penalty than you might suspect, and that ambivalence is going to lead to an end to executions. You don't want to miss that conversation a few minutes after 10. Meanwhile, we're continuing our conversation with Representative Gene Pawlowski from Winona. We're talking about pop on the school grounds. Should we go ahead and enact a bill that would shut down the sale of pop on school grounds during the day? Let us know what you think. 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Susanna from Stillwater. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Hi.
I'm a student, a senior in high school,
mm-hmm.
and I feel that some of the things that have been said on this show are incorrect.
Okay.
The idea that students are feel peer pressure into drinking the pop, I feel is entirely untrue. And also that we're swilling the pop and holding it in our mouths for a long period of time. I've never seen this happen. There's a woman who called in and said that the students were jazzed up because of the sugar in the
mm-hmm.
pop. And many of us are out late with work, doing homework much of the night, and I feel that most people would be falling asleep in class if it wasn't for the pop and the caffeine in it. And so, I think the opposite point is true in that if it wasn't for the pop, there would be no attention.
So, Susanna, what do you think will happen if they actually shut down all those pop machines?
Well, I think there could be some benefit to shutting down the pop machines, but there would need to be revenue coming elsewhere. And I think there'd be a huge increase in coffee consumption in the classrooms.
Okay, how many cavities do you have?
None.
Aha! All right, there we go.
Wonder if she drinks pop.
well, she's still on. Susanna, do you drink a lot of pop?
Not a lot.
Okay, all right.
Susanna, you bring up a couple of points. The dentists used those terms when they met with legislators after they had talked to students about their cavities and about the types of things that they consume. So it isn't a phrase that I came up with. It's what the dentists are telling us and how the students are consuming it. And it's also that the consumption is going on all day long, either because the pop's in the locker, purchased at the school, presumably, but maybe not, or in a backpack, or in some cases in the classroom. So, I really appreciate your comments, though. And you brought up another point. If they are drinking caffeine because they're working and then have to stay awake in the classroom, that's another issue I've seen for 25 years, too, and I think sometimes students and parents have to make some choices about what's the most important thing to do.
Let's go to Pete in Minneapolis. Pete, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
I'm a teacher in the St. Louis Park Alternative High School,
uh-huh.
and we were with EBD kids who traditionally don't have a long attention span. And I think one of the issues that's not really being addressed in this discussion is so just the nature of food and drink in schools in general, like school lunch. School lunches are pretty awful. Kids get a hot dog or a piece of pizza for lunch and chocolate milk or regular milk, and, you know, about 5 ounces of that. And so then they get hungry and they go upstairs to the break room and get a salty cup of soup or some chips and a pop. And so that sort of seems like that the only thing option they have are sugar snacks or processed foods and pop to get through the day. And it seems like as a teacher myself, we have juice and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and other and bottled water that we get from the 5-gallon jugs from one of those companies. And so we have that as options, and kids come down very often and get water from us. And so I think that if people got those things in and got different foods and looked at the whole issue of food in general in schools, that it might change the dialogue a little bit.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, we have those options at my high school for the students and for the staff. They can go into a line and they can get bottled water. They can get a peanut butter sandwich. They can get all of those options in school. We don't have the option where a student can get a hot dog, except on the rare occasion that the sandwich line would have a hot dog, and it's not one of the big items. I don't have students rushing out of my class to go down and get a hot dog. They do rush down, though, to get the lunch by the federal government that has pizza, which is usually a cheese pizza, and for other lunches where they do get their fruit and their vegetables, and it's all there. And sometimes they load up on it. I look at those trays, and I couldn't eat that. But so I agree with you, but at my high school, that isn't the case. The options are there for both students. Either you take the federal lunch or you go on the other line, you can get your peanut butter sandwich and your water.
We're going to go to Deanna. She's calling us from Minneapolis. Hi.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I personally don't drink pop, but it is used as rewards in the classroom and for behavior problems. If a kid isn't doing his or her work right, the reward is pop and or candy. And I also wanted to ask, how could you ban it when it's not an illegal substance?
Well, now, Deanna, are you a student?
Yeah, I'm 8th grade.
Okay.
We wouldn't. There's the banning of the consumption of it isn't in this bill. It would just not allow the machines to be in the building.
Oh.
So you could still drink the pop if you brought it in or if you got it from another source. The machines just wouldn't be there, so the availability of it would be the issue.
Yeah, and in the schools, pop is usually more expensive than just in the store. And already kids are bringing a lot of things and food items that are not supposed to be consumed during classroom odd hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think it'd make much of a difference if you took out the pop machines, because kids are getting ways to get pop at home as well as from the school.
Dan, do you think it makes a difference if we have a discussion like this statewide and parents and school teachers and administrators are listening to it and the dentists are telling them that there's a problem? Do you
yes,
think that we
I
can...
do. Okay. Although it has a lot more to do with just this discussion, because we have like health classes that are saying, like, don't use drugs and don't smoke. Yet people in my class in 8th grade, which I think is amazing, mm-hmm. are smoking. And so I think that a lot of the people who are having this problem don't really care and are not listening. And the people who are calling in do care, and so it's affecting different people.
You know, I think when a student like you calls in, though, they tend to listen a little bit more than they do to the adults.
You know, Deanna, I just want to know, how much do you see people drinking a lot of pop in classrooms?
Oh, yeah, and it's not just pop. It's like any sugary drink appeals to them, and I think that a lot of the sugar dulls some of the senses, and so they feel like they have to consume more or things with higher sugar amounts to get the same taste or the same feeling, and there is a lot of consumption.
Okay, how many cavities do you have?
Zero. Oof. I've never had any.
Okay, we've got two of them here.
Both saying they don't drink either no pop or very little.
All right. Thanks, Deanna.
Thank you.
Kevin, just before you get to the next one, for folks who want to monitor this bill, sometimes we get an interesting number assigned to a bill. In this case, it's House File 911. So if you want to monitor the bill, it's House File 911.
Please. We're going to go to Andrew in St. Paul. Andrew, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi. Just to keep your trend line going, I don't drink soda pop, and I don't have a single cavity either, so... You can start with that.
Okay.
I used to be a student council president for a high school, and so we were the pop peddlers. They hadn't yet cut a deal with one of the big distributors yet. So out of our little school store, we sold it and got a decent chunk of revenue. But I'd say in reflection, it's been a few years, we shouldn't have been doing it. There's no way we should have been selling sugar water to each other. That's just plain silly. The negatives are too great. And if the money needs to be gotten, there's a whole range of activities, whether it's going out and having, you know, a movie that the students go to, or and any number of fundraisers besides selling sugar water to kids. So I'm definitely for the bill. And the next things, yeah, I think it wouldn't be bad to go after the school lunches at some point, but conquer the first things first.
What do you mean, go after the school lunches?
Oh, someone had made a comment earlier about the high fat, high whatnot. I think we should definitely have more nutritious lunches for kids. But sounds like the teeth are rotting first. We try to control that problem and then consider if there's other things we can do to make schools healthier for our kids.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, thanks. Bye.
No, I totally agree with them. I think that's an excellent observation. And when we have former students or students telling us this, that's even a more powerful commentary on what's going on.
Well, now we have Roger Aronson who's just joined us. He's calling from Minneapolis, and he's an attorney for the Principals Association. What's the full name of that group?
Well, it's the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals.
Thank you.
And I represent Minneapolis and St. Paul principals as well. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Okay.
One of the things, you know, first of all, Gene Blowski is one of the best education legislators we've got. And I just have to think that this particular bill, I don't think is going to change dental health. And I don't think the legislature can fix dental health. And as everybody's talking about the problems that we have with kids, they're significant. But this bill doesn't change the sale of pop at a grocery store, at a gas station, at the XL Center, at the State Fair, at Valley Fair, or anything like that at all. It doesn't prohibit kids from having pop. And the discussion's really good, but we have to be very careful about, you know, the programs that we use funding this pop. And Catherine, I take a little issue with how this was characterized to open up that schools have lucrative contracts. That
mm-hmm.
sounds kind of pejorative. We make a little bit of dough on this. And as Gene told you,
$2 million over 10 years. And you know, I don't think lucrative is pejorative. I think we're talking about a reality here, which is it can be a significant source of funding.
Well, I think significant is more fair than you know lucrative, and it is significant. But we're doing an awful lot of stuff. Principals are doing a lot of stuff with this money. And as Gene was telling you, everything from band uniforms to those special student council pieces that we need to have, and we're short the dough. What might make sense on this, and I haven't talked to Gene about this, is let's let the dentists fund the activities in four high schools for a year, and let's monitor them and see if their teeth change. What do you think, Gene? Can we do that?
Well, we can ask the dentist to do that. The dentists in my district volunteer a lot of time for our students, and they volunteer a lot of time for our schools. So they are very active in our public schools and some in our private schools, too. So I'm going to let you propose that offer. And when we have our meeting, Roger, you can bring that one up to the dentist and to the others. But I think Roger's point is the one that's, again, the salient issue as to why we've had the machines multiply in our public schools, because the source of revenue was needed. And they turned to this particular source of revenue because it was a relatively lucrative one in small ways. I think, Roger, you said it was about, what, $40,000 per high school, wasn't it?
About $40,000 a high school is what it works out to.
And that adds up to a lot of money when you're looking at certain programs. So if that $40,000 isn't there, where is it going to come from? And I think when, you know, people in a community, I'm not just talking about parents now, say, well, you know, what type of a commitment is it if I vote for this increase at a local referendum, or if I tell my legislator that we should have more money for K-12? The commitment is that we would not need these types of sources of revenue if we had revenue streams that were consistent year after year, baseline adjustments. We wouldn't be turning to pop. And, Roger, your point's well taken, and I hope that the folks listening out there know that after 10 years of one-time funding or little or no increase in K-12 education, this is what the schools are having to do in order to provide the program for their students.
All right.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I agree with that 100%. It's a real difficult deal to fund these programs in schools for the band instruments, you know, the band uniforms. And we're doing fundraising all the time in schools. It's tough. It's not pleasant, but We're doing a lot of it and trying to hang in there. And Gene, I think you're doing a good job bringing this bill and to talk about it. And Catherine, we're glad to talk about schools any day on your show.
Now, Roger, quickly, what's going to happen if this thing passes and you don't get the K-12 funding that you want? So,
well, there are just a lot of things that are going to go by the boards. I mean, you know, we bought $10,000 worth of band instruments at Patrick Henry High School last year with this. We don't have the money.
Okay. Thanks, Roger.
Okay.
We're going to go to Tom in Brooklyn Park. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like, I guess, maybe take a little bit of a step backwards. And
sure.
As I'm listening to this discussion, I find myself quite shocked that we are discussing, we're basically putting up an argument where we have children's teeth and health on one side and funding on the other. And I was just wondering if anybody else seems rather shocked at how the debate has somehow slipped into a position where we are at a state where we're actually considering trading our children's body parts for money. That's how it seems to me. And I mean, I have two children, who one in junior high and one in elementary school, and I would not make a decision on my family's budget based upon whether I can sacrifice their arm or sacrifice a lung or sacrifice their teeth. I'm dedicated to my children. If our society was dedicated to our children, I would think that the relatively small amount of money we're talking about would not be a big matter. I've been a high school teacher, and I have now been in business for 20 years. And I know that businesses do not, they look at what their most valuable assets are, and they spend the money necessary to deal with those and keep them in good shape and not sacrifice them to unnecessary cost-cutting and unnecessary budget concerns. So I'm approaching this from the standpoint, I can't believe that we have even discussing whether or not we're going to trade off our children's teeth for some kind of relatively paltry funding source.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, Catherine, that was the first observation I had when the dentist presented us with what they had for numbers of cavities, and for what the discussion they were having with the students was really the one that got me to carry the bill, because it wasn't just, okay, you have more cavities. As more and more teens began to show up with cavities, they began to do an interview afterwards saying, if you don't want those cavities in your teeth, I have to know what you're doing. You know, if you're not flossing, if you're not brushing, what you're doing to make those cavities appear. And time again, it was this type of eating habit, particularly with the pop. And then they even have it down to types of pop. And, you know, we can talk about Mountain Dew and, you know, some of the others, but those were the ones that the dentist brought forward as being particularly abrasive to the teeth.
We're talking to Representative Gene Pulaski. He is a DFLer from Winona and one of two legislators who has introduced a bill that would shut down the sale of pop to kids on school grounds during the school day. We'd like to have you join this conversation. It's 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Susie in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thank you. I do want to say I agree fully with the last caller. I had the same, I just can't believe, response to this, that we're going to trade our children's health and well-being for a few dollars. I think there's no place in the schools for pop machines. I think they go, and then you figure out where you're getting the money from. My other thought is on the obesity issue. You're saying, well, why can't the students that are in school all day long with their pop machines moderate their intake? But if you look around on the streets, there are at least 50% of our adults are obese. They have not been able, as adults, to moderate their calorie intake. And I think to expect children to do that is being unrealistic. I think we're teaching them terrible eating habits, to be drinking all day long sugar drinks. And I think that continues throughout their life. And like I said, I think it's out of place.
Okay, thanks, Susie.
Thank you.
No, thank you. I appreciate your comments. This is, Catherine, pretty indicative of the comments I've been getting over the last 5 days, both at home. And we did have 300 people show up at our Eggs and Issues on Saturday, mainly on education funding, so we had a lot of parents there.
What do you think is going to happen with this bill?
The first thing that will happen is I'm going to have a meeting with all of the affected parties, and we're going to go over the scope of the problem, and then I want to hear everybody air their concerns, much like you're doing today. So I have not put in a hearing for the bill yet. once that meeting is taken place, then I'll consider putting a hearing in, but I also want some other options. If this isn't the best option, then what other options are out there in order to address the problem that we've discovered? And, of course, one option would be to get more money for K-12. That might be an option that could offset the need to have these machines in the buildings.
Once you get the machines in the building, though, isn't it hard to get them out?
It's going to be very difficult to get them out because you do have the revenue stream, and then you do have patterns that have developed within the school districts that they count not just on the revenue stream, but as people have called in, the consumption of the product.
Okay. We're going to go to Hannah calling us from St. Paul. Hannah, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to comment that, to take pop away from high schoolers, I think we're old enough to regulate our own pop intake, and that we'd get pop anyways, and that to take it away is just, like, bossing us around, and that, like, a lot of times I need to have a pop or sleep through my next class because I can't stay awake sometimes, and a lot of people use it that way.
How old are you, Hannah?
I'm 16.
How much pop do you think you drink during the day?
I drink about a can a day.
Okay. Do you see people do more?
Yeah.
Okay. But basically you find this sort of a patronizing idea?
Yeah. I mean, we're in high school. I can understand, like, elementary school and junior high, but, I mean, we really are old enough.
Hannah, why do you have trouble staying awake in class?
Because I have to be at school at 6:30 or 7:30 every morning.
And
I have to stay up at nights doing homework.
Okay, so you don't have a job?
No.
No, you're working very late.
Yeah,
and
people who do have jobs, I mean, it's almost impossible without, I mean, we don't have coffee machines at school or anything.
Mm-hmm.
They stay up so late some nights, and they don't get any sleep. And,
okay.
I mean, you know, they can sleep through their class, or they could have a pop, and they can put off sleep for another hour.
Okay, well, thank you, Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to Mimi, calling us from St. Paul. Mimi, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that I'm a high school teacher, and responding to the last caller, I stay up late, too. And there are times a veteran teacher friend of mine told me I always cut off my work at night when I know that to stay up any later would mean I wouldn't be good for the students myself. So we all have to balance these issues, and it is a question of maturity, but I think we're still at the place where we are educators and leaders of our young people, and I'm sorry if it sounds patronizing, but I would like to have the institution where I work, an educational institution, place the priorities on the children's health and to not be in the business of swapping band uniforms for teeth.
Thank you very much.
Let's go to Chris, calling us from Minneapolis. Hey, Chris.
Hello. Thank you.
Yes.
I'd like to add my perspective to this. I'm 31 years old right now.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, I drank, at one point I actually counted how much I drank when I was in high school, and it was over 2 liters a day. I had a root canal when I was in high school, and many cavities as well. If you were to ask me when I was in high school, I probably would have responded similar to the high schoolers who have called in your show, saying that I wouldn't want to have anybody taking pop away from me.
Mm-hmm.
What I've discovered since then is that I really, truly believe pop is a drug just as much as tobacco. I've never smoked, but I've discovered that when I was reaching for a pop in later years, it was exactly the same moment people around me were reaching for cigarettes. And I actually stopped drinking pop about 6 years ago, and when I stopped drinking pop, I went through serious withdrawal. I was dehydrated for about 3 weeks, where I had to have constantly a gallon of water next to me, and I drank probably about 2 or 3 gallons a day in order to counter the dehydration that the pop made. I think what we need to be addressing here, really, is the addictive qualities of it, and I applaud the representative for this. I think it's a good first step. I actually would like to see more happening. I think we need to be more aware of the addictive qualities of pop.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris.
We're going to go to Deborah in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi. I am a dental hygienist, and I work in public health.
And I really appreciate this bill because as I listen to the discussion about revenue streams, one thing it doesn't take into account is the cost of all those dental services. And the previous caller mentioned a root canal. Well, a root canal and the subsequent crown that will be needed is $500 to $1,000. So rather than asking, I think the caller said that dentists should pay for band uniforms, perhaps soda manufacturers should pay for dental care, particularly given that, for example, Minnesota Healthcare Program recipients, so that's low-income kids, who are twice as likely to have dental disease, are about half as likely to have a dental visit in a year. So I think a couple years ago they found in some neighborhoods of or some zip code areas of the Twin Cities that only 20 to 30% of those kids had a dental visit.
Okay.
Now she brings up a good point, too, that over my 14 years in the legislature, the single biggest issue that has begun to eclipse education is health care. And healthcare costs and healthcare maintenance has become one of the primary functions of the states, and particularly the state legislature. So she does illustrate an even better point that if we weren't talking about revenue streams, the amount of money that we're spending for maintenance of this particular type of eating disorder or way of eating is also exorbitant and ultimately falls back on the taxpayers too in other ways.
Let's go to Scott in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I'm just sitting here driving along talking to my son, and he said probably a third of any given high school, the kids chew tobacco every day, and probably half the kids smoke or close to it. And it seems kind of, a ridiculous argument. I mean, drinking pop in school, and the guys come up with statements like they're drinking battery acid, they're taking speed, a lady said, and sugar. I mean, you guys are carrying this to kind of an extreme. And if you think you need funding from pop machines, why don't you just force the kids to brush their teeth like three times a day?
Okay. Well, first of all, tobacco products are banned from the schools. Whether they're chewing it or smoking it, that is illegal. That is not to take place, and there are repercussions for doing it. This doesn't ban pop from the schools. It simply says that the machines would not be available in the schools. So it's a little bit different issue, and I think that we'd all agree that whether you're chewing tobacco or smoking it, that there is a harm involved with that also.
Let's try to get one more call in very quickly. Let's go to Mike in St. Paul. You're going to have to be speedy.
Okay, thank you, Catherine, for taking my call. I'm a drug counselor, and I haven't heard anybody mention aspartame in diet drinks. And very quickly, if any of your listeners want to check that out, there's a Dr. Wayne Green who in Concord, New Hampshire, who has a pamphlet on that. But precisely, to be quick, aspartame is very deadly and affects different people differently depending on their body chemistry.
Okay, Mike, I'm afraid that's it. I want to thank you for calling us. Representative, I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you, Catherine. I enjoyed it.
Gene Pulaski is a DFL state representative from Winona, and we thank you as well for your calls on legislation to stop the sale of pop on school grounds during the school day. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. Minnesota Public Radio's membership drive begins.